Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. Like the rest of the nation, North Carolina has come a long way over the last several decades in how it treats people battling mental illness. What once was treated as a taboo subject is now discussed more openly and honestly, and at the same time, the expertise of mental health providers and the therapies at their disposal continue to improve. Unfortunately, despite these advances, massive systemic problems and challenges persist. Public funding for mental health services remains absurdly inadequate, and the pressures of our ever more fast-paced society continue to take a terrible toll, especially on young people for whom suicide rates have spiked to frightening levels. Thankfully, North Carolina is home to some strong and inspiring advocates for mental health reform. Recently, I got a chance to sit down and chat with two of them, Debbie Dehoff and Michelle Laws of NAMI NC, the North Carolina chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Well, Debbie Dehoff and Michelle Laws, welcome to News and Views. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for inviting us.
The National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, we refer to it here in North Carolina, does amazing work and has amazing challenges that we still confront in our state. I don't know if either one of you would like to talk about, sort of give us an overview of where we are and how far we still have to go in properly addressing the issue of mental illness and mental health in our society.
I've worked in mental health for, 45 years, I think, and unfortunately, so many of the same problems remain. We still don't have enough hospital beds. We have people who don't know where to go in a crisis and then land in the emergency departments and wait. Sadly, we have so many people in our jails and our prisons who are affected by mental illness. Our early intervention activities need to be expanded. And part of that is because of access to health care. Thankfully, we're seeing a little movement this year on access to health care. Yeah. We're not sure where it'll go. There are so many issues with that, but we're excited to see that.
It seems as if it's almost a universal challenge, and I think that's probably the most surprising thing when you think about it. It's not like even people of wealth and resources don't have to deal with this issue. We all deal with this issue, and it's sort of surprising that our political leaders don't seem to have made it the kind of priority you'd think they'd make it.
You're spot on, Rob. In part of my work, my task is to try and educate those members of the General Assembly and other policymakers and influencers about the importance of adequately funding mental health services, making sure that there are proper supports, community supports in place for people.
Well, speaking of what we should be doing, y'all have an ambitious agenda, legislative agenda. They're putting the budget together now. Talk to us about that. I see one of the top items is obviously to restore funding cuts that have taken place over the last several years. We've had long-term cuts to mental health. We need to restore the funding for those.
Right. The continuing cuts is a real source of concern. It's been going on really, since I think we looked, and it was around 2012 that major cuts started happening to mental health, just at a time when actually I think the stigma is being addressed a little bit. People talk more about mental illness and realizing that it's everywhere, 1 in 5 Americans. So I think one of the biggest things that we're trying to get through our legislative agenda is an increased level of funding to treat mental illness. And that would cover the gamut of group homes, for example, one choice for people. Not everybody wants a group home. Many people want to live independently, and we want that too. But the state abandoned all kinds of people in group homes years ago when they failed to adequately fund them. So that's one of our agenda items. And I think another thing, it's not really on the agenda per se, but it's an issue, is the constant change in mental health. When you look at the names of, who can even remember the names of where you go for help? They're constantly merging and changing, and that's because they're driven to do that. Now we've, of course, got integrated health care coming in to combine with behavioral health care. And of course, we want to treat the whole person. Of course, that's a great thing. But it's more change for people who may have cognitive impairments, and you know, their diagnosis may lead to confusion and an inability to kind of handle that.
Notion that someone with mental illness is going to think rationally about where should I shop for the best services that can help me?
Exactly, Rob. Exactly.
Michelle, you talked about the criminal justice system, and that's another area where we could really use some funding to help clinical staff in our prisons and correction facilities, right?
I mean,
we don't have adequate facilities in many ways in corrections, but the issue of mental health and mental illness in our correction system is obviously an enormous challenge.
Right. And we've been working with Representative Verla Insko. I want to salute her for the work that she's done with us in trying to get a bill. The drafting has been done, the filing, it hasn't moved into committee yet, but to limit the number of days that a person with a severe mental illness, schizophrenia, for example, can be held in what's called restrictive housing. Yeah. We know it as one form of it is solitary confinement. There are different levels of restrictive housing. And so really looking at ways that we can better equip the prisons, which have become our default mental health system provider, better equip them with personnel to serve the population of persons with mental illness. And that's a huge need. And so we're working on that as one of our priorities.
That obviously seems like a top priority. Another one that y'all have identified in your agenda is the issue of dealing with young people, adolescents, and sort of you talk about ending the silence. This issue of teen and young person suicide is such a crisis in our country. Obviously, it's a problem for adults as well, but talk to us about how we could do a better job of really getting our kids aware, ending some of the, you know, silence that goes on around these kinds of tragedies.
We're so excited about Ending the Silence. It's a new signature program that our national office has put out with the support of Tipper Gore, actually, funding support. And what it is, it's what we call a presentation model. So we get a young person, defined as under 30, regular age person, and they together speak to middle schoolers and high schoolers, staff, and they basically tell the story, which is a relevant, timely story for the individual who's under 30, of their first break, of their first experience with mental illness, and what they did to get help, and how their journey has taken them towards recovery. And then it's balanced up by the story of a family member as well. And it's an evidence-based program. They test the kids before and after, and they test to see what are the symptoms and signs of mental illness so that if they have a friend or a student that they're worried about, they might realize, oh, that's what I'm looking at. Then they learn what to do about it, how to make a referral, how to go, if it doesn't work, to first go to the parents, they learn to go to somebody else. And they're tested 6 months later, and they've learned those two things. They've learned the symptoms and what to do about it. So we're currently working with our affiliates. All of our programs are implemented through our affiliates, and they're going through online training and direct face-to-face training and contacting school systems throughout the state to see if they can make these presentations. And Michelle has gotten us a bill that will help us launch these. And I'll let her tell you a little bit about
the bill. Nice to have a high-powered lobbyist over there at the General Assembly.
It helps for a lot of people to be over there telling their story and advocating. I think this is one of the issues that many people support, and we need more voices. But we're asking for appropriations to support, to help NAMI expand its youth-focused programs. Ending the Silence is one. We're at $200,000 to help us get it into more of the schools. One of the challenges or barriers that some of our affiliates were facing was the schools feeling like they've been inundated with these mandates there's lots to do and they can't take on anything else without some resources. They can't ask a teacher to go and provide space and time and so forth without some way supporting. So hopefully we'll be able to give some support to some of the schools in Wake County and in a few other districts to incorporate Ending the Silence into their school services or programs for kids. And then we're also looking at ways to work with families. Family to Family is another one of our signature programs. And, my whole focus is getting young people to feel comfortable about talking about a mental illness and whether it's in the schools or in their homes or what have you. I believe that some of the things that we're seeing, the tragic stories that we're seeing of kids who felt isolated, they felt bullied, they felt, you know, like they were alone and didn't have a support system in place. I'm not saying this will end all school violence and so forth, but it'll at least begin to create this culture of accepting people with mental health disabilities.
You know, along those lines, I want to add that one of the things that we work on at NAMI North Carolina is developing campus clubs. I think we currently have around 10 clubs at the campus level, UNC, NC State, Duke. It's a support kind of organization for kids in college who may have themselves be affected by mental illness, or it may be that their family is affected. And, they'll get stress balls during exam time and do different activities, and they just get the conversation going. You know, one of the worst things is to be isolated, and that happens so much with mental illness. So if we get these conversations going in middle and high school and also in campus clubs, I think we're on the road to recovery.
Our time is limited, but there are a couple of events coming up that I know you all want to make people aware of. One is on May 8th. That's going to be an actual advocacy day at the General Assembly, right, Michelle?
Yes, and we are excited. So we initially had May 1st. It was set.
Other things
set,
going on that day.
Well, it was set, and then you know, we had speakers confirmed.
Oh, my goodness.
And then about 2 weeks later, after I had finished all of the updating the website, and the teachers announced that they are going to come back to Raleigh on May 1st. At any rate, so we had to move our date. We decided that it was best. So May 8th is our advocacy day, and we're so thrilled. We're partnering with Mental Health America of the Central Carolinas, which are they're headquartered in Charlotte, and they're bringing a bus. They've chartered a bus. They're bringing some people out of Charlotte by bus. We've got our affiliates in what we call the South Mountains area who will be bringing people from that area as well. So hopefully there'll be good representation from people all over the state. And we're simply going to meet with our legislators and hopefully encourage them to support our legislative agenda and to continue or to begin to advocate and be champions for mental health.
Tell the speakers.
Oh, the speakers.
Oh,
yes. So we've got Deputy Secretary of Behavioral Health and Intellectual Disabilities, Cody Kinsley. We had the Secretary Cohen, but with the date change,
right,
that now conflicts. We've got Secretary Larry Hall, who is Secretary of Military and Veteran Affairs. We have Representative Verla Insko. We have Representative Gregory Murphy, who is Chair of Health and Human Services Appropriations. And we've invited the governor, and there's some movement. Hopefully he will be able to come by, but he has been invited, and we haven't gotten the final word. And so we're really, really excited, and we will have two people who will share and tell their story. And so we're just thrilled.
And last but not least, for the folks who can't make it to Advocacy Day at the General Assembly, on Saturday, May 18th, NAMI walks, right?
We're excited. We have a brand new walk staff person, our development and special events person, Pooja Mehta. We're back at the Dix campus. Our honorary chair is the Duke basketball, women's basketball chief, so we're excited about that. Mm. And usually we have well over 1,000 people, and really it's a celebration of recovery. So it's part of is just being out there, celebrating, having all of our affiliates. We have games for the kids. We've got face painters. We'll have a dog contest. We'll have a t-shirt contest. We're actually doing capes this year. The staff are all going to dress up as the Caped Crusaders.
Oh,
and we're going to have a little cape making station for children there. So the idea is to raise money to help fund these important programs that NAMI does. We share this money with our affiliates who actually run our signature programs. They do our support groups, they do our signature programs, our psychoeducational programs, and all that is free. But we all know it costs something. So we try to get our friends and families to walk with us and donate and support this great event. So pray for sunshine.
Yeah. We will.
And if people want to sign up for both, they can sign up for the NAMI Walks, and they can also register for our Advocacy Day on our website at www.naminc.org. That's www.naminc.org. And they can go and join us.
Well, we wish you all the best. Please keep up the good work. Let's hope we get to chat again later this year and talk about some of the successes you've had in the General Assembly. We'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. Be sure to check us out online and subscribe to our free newsletters at ncpolicywatch.com. For producer Clayton Hinkle, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.